This episode is brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768.
Today's episode is also brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back, with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey friends, and welcome to this episode of the Canby Current. I am your host, James Walton. Let's read the news. Oregon City elected officials, police, and other employees, citizens, and family members gathered Tuesday night to dedicate the city's new public safety building and civic center and to honor the memory of the fallen police officer after which it was named, Robert Libke. The 41-year-old Reserve Oregon City Police Department officer was shot and killed in November 2013 while responding to a 911 call on Lynn Avenue, not far from where the Robert Libke Public Safety Building now proudly stands. He was the first Oregon City police officer killed in the line of duty since 1906, when Officer George Hanlon was shot by a burglary suspect. A permanent display of Libke's bronzed boots were incorporated into the building project, which included contributions and input from numerous Oregon City community members, elected officials, city staff, local artists, architects, and contractors, and members of the slain officer's family. The attendance was restricted due to COVID-19, but it was live-streamed on YouTube. The ceremony included Mayor Dan Holliday's presentation of the Distinguished Service Medal to Oregon City Police Chief James Band, assisted by Band's wife and the widow of Robert Libke, Wendy. After the brief ceremony, a ribbon was cut by Mayor Holliday, all four city commissioners, Wendy Libke, and Ziva Libke, the daughter Robert Libke never met. Wendy was 6 months pregnant when he died. This ribbon-cutting ceremony is our first step in the new legacy of our department and our service to the residents of Oregon City, said Chief Band. This building will be a beacon of safety for our community for years to come. The $16 million project replaces the former police headquarters at 320 Warner Milne Road, which was originally built in the 1960s, but fails to meet current minimum facility standards. The one-story cross-laminated timber structure represents the latest in building technology and reflects a modern-day approach to how safety facilities are being integrated into the surrounding neighborhoods. It replaced the 90-year-old Mount Pleasant Elementary School, a historic building that had outlived its usefulness. The school was built in 1929 and served students for over eight decades. Oregon City purchased the property in 2014 and demolished it 5 years later to make way for the Robert Libke facility. The arched window that once hung over the school's main door was incorporated into a display that helps frame the courtyard of the new building. The school's cornerstone was also preserved in the display. A site of an even older Mount Pleasant schoolhouse built with log timbers in 1856 by teacher Francis Holmes is marked nearby. As Oregon prepares to enter its eighth month of grappling with the coronavirus pandemic, all but four of the state's 36 counties have moved into the second phase of Governor Kate Brown's reopening plan. Three of those, Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington, comprise the Portland metro area, which contains approximately 60% of the state's population and which is nowhere close to Phase 2, according to the governor's metrics. Those three counties have also been lumped together by the state for reopening decisions because many Clackamas County residents work elsewhere in the Tri-County area and vice versa. However, Clackamas has a smaller population with fewer COVID-19 cases and deaths than its metro area neighbors, and leaders have repeatedly called for Clackamas and Washington counties to be unshackled from the state's largest concentrated center in Portland and Multnomah. During a meeting of the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners last Thursday, County Chair Jim Bernard said he, along with the chairs of Washington and Multnomah counties, have essentially given up hope of the Portland metro area ever meeting the strict standards the state has imposed. "We talked about where we are, and where we are, frankly, is going nowhere," Bernard said. "We're never going to reach these metrics to the satisfaction of the state to move forward, so we need to look at something different." The fourth county still in Phase 1 is Malheur County in southeast Oregon, a rural expanse with a population roughly equivalent to that of the Canby School District, spread across almost 10,000 square miles. Suffice it to say, it faces different challenges with regards to COVID-19 than the Portland Metro. "There are only four counties in the state that have not passed to Phase 2, said Bernard. "Something has to happen. We are not the rest of the state. I mean, you talk urban-rural divide, well, you have an urban divide here that needs to be looked at differently." Bernard has asked County Public Health Director Dr. Philip Mason Joyner and Public Health Officer Dr. Sarah Present to draft a letter to Governor Brown and the Oregon Health Authority requesting that they reevaluate the COVID-19 metrics for reopening schools and businesses in Clackamas and its neighboring counties. "We're never going to get out of this cycle until we do something different," said Bernard. "We need to work together with the state and convince the state that our metrics need to be fixed." While there are some in the Portland metro area who feel the three counties should draft their own plans and metrics for reopening and move forward, with or without the governor's blessing, Bernard believes this to be a distinct minority. "Most leaders favor asking for permission rather than forgiveness," he said, "at least for the time being." "There's probably not support for three counties to do that," he said, "but we do need to tell the governor that there is a difference between the three of us and the rest of the state. And we need to show where those differences are and convince the governor and her staff that this is the right path." Bernard estimated that it would take Dr. Mason Joyner, Dr. Present, and the rest of the county public health team 2 to 3 weeks to compile the challenges and barriers currently facing the metro region in meeting the governor's metrics and suggest reasonable changes to those metrics that might be made. During a year when health and food have been harder to come by, particularly for communities of color, which tend to face greater income inequality and have been disproportionately impacted by the coronavirus pandemic, two local nonprofits that serve those vulnerable populations have received $10,000 grants from Clackamas County to enhance their services. The grants to Bridging Cultures Canby and the Canby Center, part of $250,000 awarded to a variety of charitable organizations and services throughout the county's 2020 Small Grants Program, are both aimed at increasing their ability to provide food to those in need. The Canby Center has seen demand for its weekly food program more than quadruple this year, from 392 families served in March to 1,792 2 months later in May. Almost three-quarters of their clients are Hispanic. The grant from Clackamas County will help offset the cost of installing a walk-in refrigerator that was donated to the center earlier this year. Bridging Cultures' mission is to bridge cultural understanding between the Latino and Anglo cultures. Their current goal is to help COVID-impacted immigrant families in the Canby area. A survey of the group conducted in the spring revealed that 36% of the families they serve reported an immediate need for food due to the coronavirus pandemic and related economic insecurities. The county's grant will go towards the purchase of a 17-foot enclosed cargo truck to deliver food boxes. The increased need has coincided with more challenging fundraising environment due to the economic recession and widespread layoffs, plus the inability to do traditional fundraising events because of gathering size restrictions. Both Bridging Cultures and the Canby Center have been forced to cancel large fundraising events this year due to COVID-19. This is the 12th consecutive year Clackamas County has offered small grants programs to help local nonprofits that provide services to vulnerable populations living within the county. This year, 38 groups were selected for grants out of 78 applications. Organizations receiving grants are required to show how funds are used. The continual evaluation includes reviews of service levels and performance measures. For a full list of the selected projects, as well as those who are not approved for funding, find this story on our website at canbefirst.com. The massive Riverside fire in Clackamas County is now more than half contained. The positive news came from Incident Command of the 138,000-acre conflagration on Monday, October 5th. A high-pressure system moving inland from the coast will bring warm and dry conditions to the fire area for the next couple of days. The high-pressure ridge will begin to weaken Wednesday, bringing cooler conditions and increasing clouds in the latter part of the week. With the warmer and drier weather, there could be a slight increase in fire behavior. Rain is in the forecast for Friday and is expected to linger through the weekend. Firefighters responded to two 911 reports of smoke on the north end of the fire Sunday. Handheld infrared work showed minimal heat sources along the fire line this weekend, but crews are continuing to work along the northern border to identify and extinguish hotspots. Good progress is being made with suppression repair work and will continue along contingency lines, according to Incident Command. These efforts include pulling back berms, installing water bars, and clearing roadside ditches and culverts. No information has yet been released on the cause of the Riverside fire, which is under investigation. Human activity is believed to be responsible, mainly because no natural cause of fire, such as lightning or volcanic activity, were reported in the area the night the Riverside fire began. However, there is a wide variety of human sources of fire, most all of which are accidental. All evacuation orders have been lifted for Clackamas County, as has the countywide curfew that was in place during the first week of the wildfire crisis. Current evacuation information for Marion County is available online or by calling 503-588-5032. One of the area's newest restaurants may be known for their humility, but that doesn't mean they can't kick a little ass every now and then. The Humble Pig Cafe received the well-deserved Malala Kick-Ass Business of the Month Award for October. It was certainly well-deserved considering the little restaurant's amazing service during the wildfire crisis last month, when its small staff worked tirelessly to prepare and serve hundreds of free meals a day for first responders and evacuated residents. The Malala Kick-Ass Business Award is, well, it's a rather unique accolade made from not one, but two karate trophies. Each recipient is expected to add some sort of embellishment to the award, and so it's also covered in local stickers and business cards. By tradition, it is passed on each month to a business of the previous recipient's choosing. In this case, the Humble Pig's neighbors, El Chorrito. We cannot tell you what this means to us, Humble Pig co-owner Sarah Shanky said on Facebook. Since day one of us renting this space, they have been nothing but kind and wonderful to us. They have encouraged us when things were taking a long time to get up and going. She and fellow co-owner Joe Sellinger could not ask for a kinder or more generous neighbors and friends, Shanky said. Oh, they saved us when her oven stopped working on a prime rib night and let us use theirs, she said of El Chorrito. We shared food and hellos and what's happening around town with each other. When the pandemic hit, we consulted on what to do together. We supported each other through the fires. They have been so very kind. The award was created in March by local business owners, including Ken Fetters of The Main Shop, photographer Dave Jackson, realtor Robert Campbell, and Otis Engelhard. We were trying to come up with ways to bring the downtown business owners together and build the community, said Shanky. And this is what came of all of us brainstorming together. The point was to get all the businesses to start working together and creating a more lively, friendly downtown atmosphere.
B14068N7040.
Hey, Frankie, what are you doing?
Well, I was trying to win this direct link pattern bingo game. That Hallmark gift basket is as good as mine.
Direct Link bingo game?
You bet. Our local internet provider is hosting a virtual bingo game to show appreciation for their members. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, super cool. Who does that?
Direct Link does. They miss seeing their members during these difficult times and wanted to offer a fun way to stay engaged and win some sweet prizes.
They really do work hard to embody that cooperative spirit, don't they?
Well, October is Cooperative Month, and DirectLink is a cooperative that was started back in 1904 by local farmers, so bingo kind of makes sense. They are one of roughly 260 remaining communications co-ops in the U.S. who provide connections over 40% of the land so that more than 50 million rural Americans have the technology that they need to thrive.
Well, that's pretty unique. So how does bingo work?
DirectLink members were mailed a bingo card at the beginning of September. Simply visit directlink.coop/bingo or DirectLink Facebook page every weekday to get that day's bingo number and cross it off your card. They're playing four different simultaneous games, with the blackout prize being a four-pack of tickets to a 2021 Mariners game.
Okay, wow. Get out of my way. I gotta go get my card right now.
Good luck, you know, on everything except that Hallmark basket, because, like I said, that's mine.
The Clackamas County Fairgrounds has undergone a spooky transformation the past few weeks as some of the creative geniuses behind some of the state's top haunted houses have been working together to create a new experience, the Scare Fair. It opens Friday, and details and tickets at ccscarefair.com, but we get a sneak peek that we are eager to share with you now.
All right, tell me your name and who you're with.
David D. Jones with Creatures of the Night.
And how long have you guys been doing that?
We've been doing this for 8 years professionally as Creatures. Haunting, I've been doing it since the early 80s.
Okay, so in non-COVID years, what kind of work does Creatures of the Night do?
Creatures of the Night normally works with charities or government agencies to raise money for communities. Mm. We run a three-act, deep-themed story-type haunt, usually low blood, low gore, where we're using our story and we're getting into your head. I come from a neuropsych background, and I will get in your head.
Love that. And why do you do that? Why do you do what you do?
It started off as a lark. Mm. We literally did this with a couple neighbors. All of Creatures of the Night is a community. I'm not solely Creatures of the Night. We have ridiculously talented and wonderful volunteers that we all comprise. Mm. And it is their incredible skill set that makes this so amazing. It started off as a lark.
Yeah.
It was a one-off, a goof. And then 6 months later, we were partnered with the city of West Lynn. They started calling us because people started calling, asking, is that what happened to the little girl?
Mm.
It was nothing nefarious. She was abducted by some strange, bizarre cultists in a glowing temple. That never happened.
That doesn't sound nefarious at all.
No, but we discovered we accidentally created an urban legend.
Mm.
And that's when we started taking this seriously. And the more we dived into haunting and the aspect, the more we uncovered, it went far deeper than we suspected. And it actually kind of became a life calling. We realized this is something that's important. This is something that's true. This is something worth protecting. So the more that we kind of started investigating and understanding what the nature of haunting was, what the nature of the storytelling and the reasons for Halloween, we started to discover that it's a universal aspect to humanity. Every culture on this planet celebrates or at least acknowledges that life ends and that the way to get through it is as a community. Every culture digs holes in the ground, and this dates back thousands of years, and takes people into them and makes them all spooky and says, these are the mysteries.
Hmm.
Every continent on this planet, this is something actually universal to our species, to humanity. And this is something important that actually changes lives. When you go through a haunt that's done correctly, you'll have decreased cortisol levels for 30 to 45 days. You'll have increased endorphin levels. People do, in the form of dark tourism, they will tour haunts because it is a form of a mood elevator. They will do this because after you've confronted a 15-foot spider or a giant monster coming at you, suddenly where your remote, your roommate leaves the remote doesn't bother you quite so much.
Yeah.
It is a coping adaptive skill. This is something that makes people's lives better. It actually bonds people and it brings communities together who are diverse and would never have common cause.
Mm, I love that. How do you wind up here in Canby, the Clackamas County Fairgrounds?
We were approached by Davis Graveyard, who are amazing. And we are ecstatic to be able to work with Davis Graveyard, Fearlandia, The Factory, some of the best haunts in this state and the most wonderful to attend and to see. They let us know about this amazing opportunity, and a chance to haunt here in Canby with Clackamas Fairgrounds is honestly a wonderful dream, especially during C-19.
Yeah. And I mean, outside of this, did you feel like you wouldn't be able to do what you do what you love?
Actually, so this was the year in March, we started working with haunts across the country and started trying to chunk and figure out how to execute this, because this is the year that no haunt can open,
right,
at least under traditional factors.
Right.
So this year, Creatures of the Night is running between 2 and 3. We were the first to open a drive-in movie theater with actors, skits, zombies, special upgrades, blood prints on your car. We were the first to open in the nation. This is our second haunt. We will probably do one or two more that are smaller, local, community-based to raise money for Ant Farm, which works with youth in the city of Sandy and the Clackamas Valley, Clackamas County area. So we will be probably doing 3 haunts. The year that nobody can open a haunt, we will probably be doing 3.
Awesome. Cool. And yeah, so just tell us a little bit more about what the experience has been like working here at Clackamas County Fairgrounds.
First off, the compassion, humanity, and care that Clackamas County Fairgrounds has shown, especially during the wildfires and when they were able to help and outreach. The stall that we're in right now was filled with livestock 2 weeks ago.
Right.
This entire haunt was built.
I wonder what that smell was.
Yeah. Was done in less than 14 days so far. So the amount of lives saved by the people with Clackamas County has been amazing. And the fairgrounds bent over backwards. They were doing 24-hour days in making sure that people and communities were safe. Mm-hmm. It is a honor, and we are very privileged and glad to be able to help contribute and give back to people who helped our greater extended community.
Yeah. And I can hardly tell, but are you excited about this, for this Care Fair to open?
We are amazingly. At least, from what all of us are doing, every single haunt, this is going to be the most economical, life-changing, and nostalgic throwback that you've never seen before of a haunt for 2020.
Awesome. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
42. All right. Tell me your names and the company you're with.
I'm Tim DeBlumick with Fearlandia.
And I'm Brad Dascom with D&D Props.
Awesome. Tell me what a normal year looks like for Fearlandia. What do you normally do?
A smaller space underneath a creepy tent.
Okay.
And just a full-blown haunt.
Yeah.
We're out to scare the adults.
So. Okay, cool. And why do you do what you do?
Fun.
The creativity of it. Yeah. Just being able to do some creative stuff and the reactions of the guest.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. How do you wind up here, Clackamas County Fairgrounds?
Well, we know the people that the other haunts, and then they contacted us, knowing that we were going to be able to open this year.
Yeah, so you weren't doing anything outside of this. Didn't think you were going to be able to. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So, what has the experience been like?
Really different.
Yeah.
A lot more space to decorate.
Yes.
Very good. The people here at the fairgrounds have been fantastic. If we needed something, they were more than happy to try to help us out. So it worked really well. I mean, everybody's been really happy here and just wanting to make it work. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we just talked to Creatures of the Night. They're very into the storytelling aspect of this experience. It feels like you guys, is that the same for you, or it feels like you're more for the scares and the thrills a little bit?
We're more for the scares, and we usually have like 30 actors.
Yeah. Hmm. 30 oh, live actors, actors, yeah.
That are just on top of you at all moments.
Yeah. So
this is a really different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different. A long ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. What are you excited about?
The success of this. I want to see this thing packed.
Yeah.
and some people going, hey, there's something to do.
That, and that's keeping Halloween going.
Yeah.
Halloween, typically for haunters, and Tim and I were joking about this, that haunters, we try to make something different for somebody's life, because everybody's ho-drum life, you know, we give them a little adrenaline, and that's what a haunted house is. Well, there's so many fears and scares out there now that we're kind of having to do the reverse. You know, it's giving them something just to stare at and just get something to enjoy.
You got
to
tone it down a little bit. Well, real life's scary enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
This is for families and just people just to come and have some fun.
Awesome.
And enjoy Halloween.
Awesome. Cool. And you guys have been, like you said, more to work with. It's been an interesting experience and just out here working hard. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely different, and it's we're not used to outdoors like
I was going to say, sort of more the construction element, where you, rather than working with an existing space, right, you're building the space and then making it scary.
Well, we build the space from scratch with the tent
anyway. Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
So we're used to that,
but the fairgrounds handed us a field and said, all right, here you go, make a hunt. So this is it's been interesting.
Cool.
This is finding a way to give somebody the feeling like you're not in a field.
Hmm.
You know, it's giving you a different experience here. So
awesome. Cool. Anything to add?
No.
You guys did great.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Halloween. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate you. All right. If you could tell me your names and who you're with.
I'm Jeff Davis.
I'm Chris Davis with the Davis Graveyard.
And would it be correct to say, out of the four, you guys, this space is maybe the least different from how you're usually used to working for Halloween? Is that right? Because you normally do an outdoor display. Tell us what you normally do, what a normal year looks like for you.
These decorations are displayed at our home in Milwaukee, Oregon. And we set it up every year for the whole month of October, pretty much like it is here, but in a smaller space.
Yeah, yeah. How did you get started doing what you do?
A long time ago, I really got into Halloween, and about 30 years ago, at least now, we started a haunt with our friends in California, and we've been doing the yard in our house since we bought it about 27 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. And it just kind of grew and got really big from that initial.
Involved, yeah.
Yeah. Why do you do what you do?
It's creative. It's a creative outlet. We both have regular day jobs. And so this is kind of a fun thing to do. It's a little bit more creative and has more options than Christmas.
Yeah.
So we like the creative outlet.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Not quite so boxed in, but this is what it has to be. And like we mentioned, you know, you could still do a display in your front yard if you wanted to. So how'd you end up here at Clackamas County Fairgrounds?
The Clackamas County Fairgrounds contacted us. We were not going to put up our display this year because of the pandemic and large crowds. So we weren't going to do anything. And then Clackamas County Fairgrounds contacted us and asked us if we wanted to set up here. We took advantage of the opportunity to be able to have our fans come here and see the display, instead of not seeing it at all.
Yeah, it just stayed in storage for a year.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, you guys were a part of the big pool to bring the other companies into this.
They reached out to us first and then asked for other people that might be interested. We knew other haunts that were not going to go on this year that wanted to do something. And one of the other three also does an outdoor event.
Right.
So we thought this would be good for them. Hmm. So we recommended them and they jumped on board.
Yeah. So your display here, we won't give away any spoilers or whatnot, but we've talked to, you know, Creatures of the Night. They're really into the story aspect. Fearlandia just wants to scare people. What kind of motivates you? There's some things here that are kind of fun and funny. What are you sort of going for with your part of the display?
We like Whimsical. We've always tried to be family friendly, so it's entertaining. You know, the tombstones are kind of cute. Some of them are funny. Some of them are actual real people or actors that have died or stuff like that. So just kind of keep it kind of fun and interesting for people to come bring their kids. Everybody from all ages. That's what we've done.
Yeah.
And being just very creative with what we do.
Yeah.
We like to say that we're creepy, but not, and maybe a little bit dusty and old, but not bloody and gory.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like this is one part that is going to really slow people down because they're going to be trying to read each grave.
Yeah. We talked about options for that. Like, how do we maybe do a daytime or something?
People almost
like that?
Need to be able to see if they can do an event during the day.
Yeah, it's costing you guys a fortune in lights to try to light up each one so people can read it, right?
Yeah. Different lighting than we normally have at our house. So we normally light everything individually.
Yeah.
We just don't have the lighting nor the cabling to go this distance.
Yeah.
Or we are just half the width of this at least.
Yeah. Not a quarter of the size of this.
Yeah.
So our existing lighting is not working.
Yeah. So what has the experience been like? Tell us a little bit of working here at the fairgrounds.
We really are enjoying it. This is a really unique setting for us. We're getting to see our display in an area that we've not seen before. This is usually on my driveway.
Uh-huh.
And we don't normally get to, you know, walk all the way around it or
right,
see it from a
like
distance.
Right, that's a wall and that's against a garage. So we usually only see like two sides. So
you must have a big driveway, man.
Yes, we do. So seeing it here and seeing it among the trees and stuff, it's just been quite
Totally. It does really fit the scenery here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. When we saw the space, we're like, oh, this is where the graveyard needs to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the folks here at the fairground are really easy to work with.
Yeah,
they've been really accommodating. They've, you know, being able to provide us anything we needed to set up. It's been difficult trying to set up away from home.
Yeah.
You know, where you can't just go walk into the garage and grab the tool that you need
right.
to do something.
Yeah.
Can't go back to my shop and fix something really easily. So that's been a challenge, but overall, it's been fun.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great.
Yes. Enjoyed it.
Great. You guys feeling pretty excited to open?
Yeah, we think so.
We think we got
people
this.
People will like what
Well, there'll
we've
be
done.
Tweaks all the way to the end, like we do even in our own display.
Yeah.
But we'll get it done.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right, could you please tell me your name and who you're with?
I'm Ed Roberts with the Nightmare Factory at the Oregon School for the Deaf.
And how long have you been doing that?
We've been doing that now for 33 years.
So longest running in the state, I believe.
Longest running in the state, yes.
Yeah. Why do you do what you do?
First of all, I love Halloween. And then secondly, because we're a residential program at a school, the haunted house, it teaches all sorts of different skills to our students. So it's teaching acting, it's teaching set design, lighting, makeup, operation of a business, whatever. I mean, it's a great teaching tool. And it also helps bring the community in. It gives the community something to do every year. We've become kind of a tradition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what a normal year looks like for you? What's the normal Halloween season look like for your company?
A normal year. First of all, normal.
Yeah, right?
we plan year-round. So
yeah.
We're constantly designing, planning, getting ready. Now, with the onset of COVID, things have changed. But normally, we're working with the kids and our volunteers downstairs in our haunted house, which is in one of the residential halls of the school.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very fortunate that we don't have to tear down and set up every year. We continually get to change and add. And so we'll take student ideas, and then we'll incorporate those with ideas from the volunteers. And we have volunteers that have skills in lighting, sound, set design, myself. My wife's a theater director. So we're constantly working. We're always a year ahead in our design.
Yeah, awesome. And so this has been pretty different to not have a space to work, but sort of have to create the space a little bit as well and then make it scary.
Right, so fortunately, we had walls that we used for the Oregon State Fair.
Yeah.
We just were able to repurpose those walls. And then I had an idea, what I kind of wanted to do, because we're the Nightmare Factory, let's do some sort of factory-like thing.
Yeah.
And then it grew from that. I mean, it simply was going to be just these scenes here.
Yeah.
And then I have a lady who's an artist out of Forest Grove. She brought in the spiders, and the gentleman who brought in the pirates is a local home hunter out of Kaiser. So these are all people that are on my tech team that have helped kind of spread out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And you used a little bit the grandstands to form a little bit of the infrastructure of the experience, I feel like.
Right. Well, when I saw the grandstands, I thought, well, this would be perfect. It's great. First of all, it's cover.
Very industrial feel.
It has an industrial feel, exactly. So we were able to just kind of embellish on that. Light with it. It doesn't conflict with any of the sets. It actually adds to it. And then on the other side, because as you're driving through, the attention is really, we're drawing your attention. Some of us have studied the Disney design techniques. We're drawing your eye as best we can
yeah.
to what we want you to look at. So that's why this side is, you've got a little bit of an impact at the very first when you come in, but then all your attention is drawn over here until the end, and then there's more on that side.
Yeah, yeah. So you're the last company that we've talked to. We've seen the other three, and they, it's very interesting. They have their different styles and different themes and sort of different things they're focusing on. I feel like this is a compliment. Your guys' section is creepy AF. Like,
well, I haven't got the music going yet, and we like, we don't have, there's a projection that goes on here. We've got a lot that we haven't turned on right now.
But yeah.
Yeah, we're getting there. We'll be ready by the time we leave tonight.
Is that what you're going for? Do you really want people to feel like they had a good scare?
Well, okay, so let's talk. Because we can't, at this point in time, have any actors,
right?
We still want to give the illusion that there's still actors.
Yeah.
So there's things we've done, and I know that one of the other haunts is doing a similar thing where there is embellishments that we've used to create that illusion of movement, that illusion of there being actors here.
Yeah. What's the experience been like working here at the fairgrounds and with the other companies?
Phenomenal. Well, yeah. I know all the other companies.
Sure.
Personally, because, you know, it's small, it's Oregon.
Sure.
But going into this, I was a little, I don't know these guys and they don't know me. So, but quite honestly, just been phenomenal to work with. Really, really, really great experience here.
Yeah. Feeling pretty excited to open.
Like with any new production,
yeah,
or any production, you don't really know what's going to happen until that first night. But I'm confident that everybody who's involved is ready to go. I mean, because you have some very experienced haunters here that know how to help if the crew at Clackamas County Scare Fair come to us and say, okay, what do we do? How can you help us? We've already told them that we are 100% behind this, and that we will do whatever it takes to help them make this a huge success.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ed.
Yeah.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Canby Then is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It's your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, children's books, nonprofit and business books. You get the idea. In fact, I recently discovered these folks after reading this ad for so long. I went in there. Now my wife is upset with me for how much money I spend inside The Book Nook. So thank you, Book Nook, for being amazing and helping me buy a lot of books. It's all things books across from the backstop in downtown Canby. Well, this episode of Canby Then deals with farming. It all goes back to farming. Canby wouldn't be where and what it is without it. And most likely, Canby wouldn't be here at all. Canby can credit its agricultural success to the area's fertile sandy soil. Deposited here, geologists believed in the massive floods from Lake Missoula that ripped through the Willamette Valley during the last ice age some 15,000 years ago. And of course, the hard work of our first farmers and settlers. But the area had a reputation as a Garden of Eden long before the first Oregon Trailblazers came their way here to Canby. It began with the berries. The ground we now call Cambie was open and virtually clear of trees when white settlers first arrived here in the middle of the 19th century. Although vast rows of trees encircled this prairie, abundant crops of strawberries and other wild fruits grew here. Most historians believe the land was a garden for the local Native American tribes who had long before burned down the trees and allowed berries to grow. The tribes who used this area, the Clackamas, a Chinookian tribe, were a nomadic people who wandered throughout the valley. They used the area like a giant store, in some respects, traveling to where the plants they survived on flourished. What is now Cambie was apparently a favorite spot, with the small tribes, as few as a dozen, never more than 80 or so, coming here for the fresh strawberries. The lush green valley was the home to Native Americans and their predecessors for eons. The Clackamas County Historical Society has several prehistoric relics collected from this area, indicating man had long used the meadows, springs, and trees of the area. Situated atop a grassy plateau above the Willamette and Mallala Rivers, the first settlement here was named Baker Prairie, probably the larger-than-life frontiersman James Baker, who lived for a time on the prairie, before leaving to make his reputation as an explorer, army scout, interpreter, soldier, territorial militia officer, and more, rubbing shoulders with legendary figures like Jim Bridger, Kit Carson, and General Custer in the process. The rambling Baker, who later in life would come to be known as Big Jim and Honest Jim, settled here in the early 1830s and operated a huge ranch and farm on the rich lands that now form North Cambie. He stayed until at least 1838 and possibly as late as 1845. The records aren't exactly ironclad. What is certain is that Baker eventually tired of farming and left, selling his interests in the farm business to a man named W.C. Dement. Other settlers followed Baker's lead, and Cambie soon cultivated a reputation as one of the Willamette Valley's richest farming utopias. Timber harvesting between 1873 and 1893 cleared the land and made the way for even more farming. If you plant it, it will grow. Peas, hops, filberts, flax, squash, potatoes, lettuce, melons, tomatoes, and of course, strawberries. You name it, it has been, or is still, been growing around here. Philander Lee, one of the Cambie's founders and the patriarch of the family that donated the land that became the town's first 24 blocks, grew apples on his land and carted them up the road that would later become Highway 99E, bound for train cars leaving Oregon City that would take them south to prospectors on the California gold fields. Legend holds that Lee and his sons, frustrated by the narrow roads they encountered in Oregon City, mandated that Cambie streets be wide enough to turn around a horse-drawn carriage, which is why downtown Cambie streets are unusually spacious compared to most city centers. In the 1930s, green peas became so abundant that they took over a city block. Countless loads of peas were stripped from the vine at what became known as Pea Viner Corner on 13th and Ivy, now the home of the Cambie Adult Center and the Cambie Swim Center. After vining, the peas were trucked to Woodburn for food processing. Produce from Cambie, especially fresh strawberries, were often first on the market in those days, and many a young Cambieite earned his or her first income as a berry picker in one of the town's many strawberry fields. Flower growers also discovered the land north of town, between the city and the Willamette River, was perfect for growing their crops. Ben Cummings grew lovely fields of pansies, irises, lilies, tulips, and other petaled varietals from the 1920s and 30s, and visitors would flock to Cambie just to view his land. Swan Island dahlias, now one of the cultural centers of Cambie, actually began, as the name suggests, on Swan Island in Portland. Swan Island dahlias was moved to rented land in Cambie in the 1940s, and around 1953, 20 acres of farmland was purchased in Cambie, and the business was relocated to its present site on North Hawley, a stone's throw from the Cambie Ferry. Grant E. Mitch of Cambie was the leading U.S. hybridizer of daffodils in the 1950s and 60s, and flower farms still surround the town today. Farming spurred the growth of the city's early economy and development from the establishment of a railroad depot to the Cambie Ferry, both of which were used primarily for agriculture and other commercial pursuits before offering passenger service. It also led directly to and supported the Clackamas County Fair and Rodeo, the annual Dahlia Festival, and former warehouse development along the railroad line, which now form much of the infrastructure of downtown Cambie. Three warehouses in particular, the W.H. Luck Warehouse, which burned in approximately 1930, the W.S. Hearst & Co. Warehouse, which was demolished in 1950, and the W.H. Bear Warehouse, which was demolished in the 1980s, facilitated shipments of farm products from Canby to market. By 1913, the Canby Produce Company, later the Canby Cooperative Cheese and Produce Company, had also established a warehouse along the railroad. Well, that does it for this episode of The Canby Current. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm James Walton. Have a great day.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hare. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.